Pangan Mangaya Tegrim, Bhaktipa Tamaham Bande, Shri Guru Ndina Sarani. Thank you for being here. The voice of this Vedic oasis for inspiration and culture. Education. Inspiration, well, that's what we need. All those things, right? People want to have a voice. You know, young people are saying, you know, nobody listens to me. Everybody does. So that, you know, they want a voice. There's people, this group wants a voice. They want people to hear us. So we want people to hear Hare Krishna. One thing, many times we ask me about Vishnujan Swami. You heard of him? So one thing is he always kept the cartels like really shiny with really nice strings. And this is not nice. So there's two different ways you can get some ribbon, you know, colorful ribbon. If you ever see in Manipur, it's about this long and it's many, many tassels, so that when they play the cartels, it's a very beautiful thing to see also. And otherwise, you just get some shoelace. There's all kinds of colors and they fit nicely and then they don't get all messed up like this. And it's also comfortable. Alright? Once they get this bad, it's very hard to polish them. They get them, you know, shiny. But if you start when they're new, and just like you polish the brass for the deity. Alright? Is that alright? Because it's Krishna's instruments. So, you see, in Chopadi Juhu, Chopadi started, but they had a nice rack for the Mridangas. Prabhupada wanted that, but so that's probably the only two temples I have. I've tried in every temple, they did, no, we do it like this, no, we do this, no, we do that. You know. But any musician, you know, they keep their instruments so careful. They worship the puja for their guitar. So anyway, it's one way to keep the consciousness more pure. This is ancient. So they asked me to speak. They gave three topics. I think I'll merge them all. One is experiences of book distribution. One is how the Bhagavatam inspires book distribution or something. Can't remember the other one. But it all goes together. I read this verse yesterday. This is a very important verse. Yad Vag Visargo Ganatava Viplava. No, Yad Vichas Chitra Padam Harir Yasho Jagat Pavitram Praganit Takari Chit Sadvayasam Tirtam Ushanti Manasa Nayatra Hamsa Niramant Yashikshaya. These words that do not describe the glories of the Lord, who alone can sanctify the atmosphere of the whole universe, are considered by saintly persons to be like unto a place of pilgrimage for crows. Since the all-perfect persons are inhabitants of the transcendental abode, they do not derive any pleasure there. Where do the crows go? Garbage. Dead bodies. They're dirty birds. Although scientists say they're very intelligent because they're clever thieves, the crows. So that it's considered intelligent amongst the animals. But they go for the garbage. The swans go and they like nice clean. Even if they go in a pond, they clean it. It becomes wherever the swans are, it's always very clean. And the swan, just to look at them, is very pleasurable. Crows look very nice. Then the next verse is, Tadvag Visargo Janatava Viprava Yasmin Pati Slokam Avadadva Bhatyapi Namaninan Tasya Yashon Kitani Yat Shinvanti Gayanti Vinanti Sadhava. That's First Canto, Chapter 5, Canon 11. On the other hand, that literature which is full of descriptions of the transcendental glories of the name, fame, forms, pastimes, etc., of the unlimited Supreme Lord, is a different creation, full of transcendental words directed toward bringing about a revolution in the impious lives of this world's misdirected civilization. Such transcendental literatures, even though imperfectly composed, are heard, sung, and accepted by purified men who are perfectly honest. You heard of Vaisheshika Prabhu? He was here maybe. He's a leading inspirational book distributor. He joined when he was about 16 years old and started distributing books right away and never stopped. Even when he was a householder, he had his own little business, but he went every day for, Sankirtan, for book distribution. Now he's traveling all over the world and inspiring people. And his temple, he started the, call it Weekend Warriors, because he saw there was only grihasthas, only congregation, there was no brahmacharis in America. So, get a group of once a month to go and have a little harinam and distribute books in a very simple way. But it grew and grew, and now in his temple, they're one of the top bookers, because they have a big congregation. But for marathons, he gets like 200 or 300 devotees. Sometimes somebody does only one book. Some people do many. Whole families go door to door, and they're very inspired. But when I was working with him back in 1975, I think it was, 74, he would hand people the book and say, this book has heard some and accepted by purified men everywhere. And that's a fact. But, that people feel like, well, maybe I'm a good person, thoroughly honest, purified men everywhere who are thoroughly honest. They'll appreciate the Bhagavad Gita. It's not meant for envious people. Envious people, they won't like it. They won't want to hear it. But that's, really envious, bad, really envious people. But if we study Bhagavad Gita, then naturally we'll get energy, we'll get inspired, we'll get power, empowerment, that's a big word nowadays, to distribute it. And distributing books is another sadhana. We have our temple, sadhana, artik and japa and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. But it's also sadhana to preach. That's another side. That it goes together. Both are very important. Somebody may not be actually preaching, but everybody is understanding that we're working for the sake of saving the conditioned souls. So we have a temple, a nice temple. So when people come to the temple, they can become enlightened. They can be, think Krishna must be great. They can hear about Krishna. They can get some prasada. They can hear kirtan. So someone may never leave the temple, but if they're thinking like that, we want to make the temple nice, so it's preaching. The temple is also preaching. Prabhupada gave an example of the Indian Railroad. I think the Indian Railroad is the world's biggest employer. They have the most employees of any other entity in the world. Very few people drive the train, right? But everyone is working to make sure the train goes, right? The train has to move. People have to get on the train, so everybody is working. So the same thing you said for our movement. We're all working to push it on, whatever we're doing. So that some kind of preaching, but direct preaching is special mercy to, actually. And Prabhupada said, we're distributing books, but that will remember Krishna, because it's Krishna's book, and we're showing people pictures of Krishna, telling them Krishna's great, this book is great, that's Krishna, and this book is nice, and whatever, we want to tell them. So it's something like, chemicals. Sometimes you get glue, like super strong glue, not super glue, but you get two tubes, A and B, right? So both of them are nothing. You just put it by itself. But when you mix them together, then it becomes... super most powerful, because it's too strong to have it, they can't have it mixed together until the last minute. So when you put the internal sadhana, the temple, the japa, and reading, hearing, and discussing Krishna Leela, and then we put that together with going out and the discipline, you know, preaching, we have to become tolerant. Krishna says, comes to Tikshosha Bharata, you have to be tolerant, right? How are you going to become tolerant if you never, if we avoid any kind of difficulty? Yeah. That's, you know, we work with other devotees, and we have to tolerate that. We go out, we have to tolerate the, you know, how the difficulties are doing, getting out to a place to distribute books, you know, keeping books, carrying books, and then meeting people who are not very favorable sometimes, sometimes very inimical, sometimes just stupid, you know. And also meeting people who glorify you for, oh, you're so wonderful that you're doing this. And then we might become puffed up. So both. So Krishna, you know, he's saying in chapter 12, and in many other places in chapter 12 it's concentrated, but equal in happiness and distress, equal in victory and defeat, equal in praise and blame, success and failure, right? Dualities. Even that, I passed a little school there in Mahabaleshwar, and they had on the front door, they had opposite words, you know, up, down, like that simple ones, because it was an elementary school. Dualities. So we have to become free. Yesham tantikatam papam janam punyakamam te dvanda moha nirmukta. And we get free from the dualities. And everybody is, you know, more or less controlled by dualities. You want to not be, you want to be rich, not poor. Right? You want to be popular, not, you know, nobody likes you. You want, what would be the opposite word of popular? You know, unpopular. But, you know, we want to be beautiful, so everywhere is advertising some beautiful. Whatever people think beauty is, that's also, they say it's in the eye of the beholder, it's another relative consideration. They say beauty is skin deep. They people say these kind of things, I don't know if they still say that. My mother used to say beauty is as beauty does. Somebody has a pretty face doesn't mean necessarily that they're great people, or they have nice clothes and nice jewelry, makes them a great person, right? But people think like that, they just judge completely by the skin, and by now by the dress. And the skin, you see, is not even skin anymore, they put so much stuff on it before they go out of the house. I saw one signboard on the way here, it showed a woman's face, you know, one side was like your color, and the other side was white. It's like putting something on there. But in Africa, also, skin lightener, hair straightener, you know, then you'll be beautiful. So in Africa, like where I go, you know, everybody was quite dark. But in the signboards, all the women are golden, shining golden color, you know, long hair. And so they make people crazy that, oh, you have to be like that, but they can't be like that. No matter how much they put something on. And in Australia, they say suntan is bliss. And in Europe, everywhere, all over Europe, in England, Germany, they have what they call a solarium, an artificial suntan. And you pay, you know, you go for, they have it so powerful, one I saw, it said 40,000 watts or something. You know, you just get in this box and you get dark. And that's beautiful. The white people want to get dark, the dark people want to get dark. Skinny people want to get big, fat people want to get skinny. So duality, they're pushing everybody. And especially, you know, nowadays, it's, you want to get rich. You don't want to be poor. Being poor is, Kali Yuga says that, you know, a man will be judged by his money. You don't have money, that's why Prabhupada, he likes, you know, to build beautiful temples to show you've got something. They won't listen to a poor person. Like they used to be, a sadhu was poor, and renowned people would admire that. Now if he's very rich, you know, churches and, you know, famous leaders. But the devotees stay renounced. So Lord Chaitanya, you know, he compared himself to a gardener. And he talked about the fruits of love of Godhead, you know, that were being produced. And then he was saying, how can I, just one gardener, I need help to distribute these fruits. I can't do it myself. You ready? See if you have any charts and read it. So I always thought that's the books, you know, the fruits of Prabhupada's love of Godhead. He gave us so many books. But like Prabhupada, he couldn't distribute them all himself. He started out in New York, that's basically he went out every day and he tried to distribute some books just by going in bookstores, and most of them they'd say, okay Swamiji, you can put the book here and if we sell it, you know, then we'll give you the money. Not like they bought the book, because Srimad Bhagavatam was an unheard of book. Bhagavad Gita, you know, some people heard of it, a few scholars maybe. Very few people heard of Bhagavad Gita. A few philosophy students, maybe. But Srimad Bhagavatam, no one ever heard of it. And then it didn't have any pictures, and the cover is just brown color. And even after Prabhupada's disappearance, devotees went around to all the bookshops in New York City, and they found many still there. And people remembered Swamiji. You know, he would give them samosas or something. Come around checking, somebody bought a book, you give them another one. And then when, you know, when devotees offered help, he pulled down all his manuscripts and said, can you type this? You know, he had up to the third canto. Not at the beginning, was in handwriting and typing. And then he, you know, got it published. You know, got devotees, made the BBC organized. Then he had to get, you know, people to distribute the books because he can't do it all himself. They said one intelligent man sitting down can do more than 100, you know, crazy people running around. But he took all these crazy people and got them out and distributing books. And that we're still doing that. There's no limit, you know. When I was in Los Angeles in 1972, I think. Some devotees were saying, well, we can't distribute any more books. We distributed so many already. I don't know how they get such an idea. I was, how can you say that? Even in that, you know, within a mile radius of the temple, and most of the people never heard of it. Even the people right down the street, they don't know the temple's there. But then, you know, we found out it's not true. The more books you distribute, the more people want them. They become more famous. You know. So that's our, you know, main advertising at the moment, chanting publicly in books. You know, people meet devotees all the time and then they see the books over and over again. And then they eventually want it. I read yesterday a letter that we got from Vijay Prabhu. It's quite interesting. Just to give some idea, like sometimes we think, well, nobody reads a book. People always tell you, I won't read it, right? No, I don't read. That's okay. This book, even if you don't read it, it's good for you. You know, it's Krishna. So keeping it in your house, it's auspicious. And also, you know, they'll, unless they hide it somewhere, but if they put it on a shelf, they're going to see it, friends are going to see it. Many times it's like that. Someone bought the book, but someone else reads it, right? Very, very, very many cases of that. So this was a, can't always find that. So this devotee, he's the temple president of Paris. He's my godbrother. And so he said, I got an unusual phone call. Divinely inspired, must be. So someone says, am I speaking to Nithai? Name is Nithai Go. He said, yes. Do you remember you gave a book coming back about 10 years ago in St. Denis? That's a small city outside of Paris. And it's famous for a cathedral, he says, where the kings of France are buried. He said, I've distributed many books, so who is this? She says, my husband bought the book from you, and you dedicated, you put your name and your phone number. It was 10 years later. My husband didn't read it. He never reads, but I read it. And why the husband bought it? And he's a Muslim. I read it once, and now I'm reading it again. I like it. And so I wanted to thank you. So he said, I'm honored. She says, I divorced this man. Now I'm living in another city. I come from a Muslim background, but I'm not a Muslim. I believe in reincarnation, appreciate much the philosophy of this book. And then he says, we have many more you'll like. She says, go on distributing these books. They help people. I'm very grateful to have received it. Maybe these books won't be read by people who are buying them, but in my case, they finally come to people who appreciate them. So I took her number and promised to meet her again and show her some more books. Before that, he was at a exhibition, some department store or something. They wanted an Indian exhibition, and they asked him to have a book table, a big shopping mall. So he was there distributing books, meeting a lot of nice people. He was talking to two people about a few books. One lady came up looking at the Gita. He said, do you know this book? She said, yes, it's a bomb. What do you mean exactly? She said, not kind of terrorist bomb, a real spiritual bomb that reveals unmatchable knowledge never disclosed before and so precious for human society. And this is in France, it's very atheistic as far as, you know, the country in general. The government's like probably more atheistic than communist governments. They got all excited, the French government, when they were doing that, banning the Bhagavad Gita in Russia. They were thinking, yeah, good idea, you know. But the people are not like that. So the lady had great realization. She never met a devotee, she just had the book. So she bought more books and said she'd come back with her friend. The two ladies came and started talking about Bhagavad Gita. The new one said, you know, it's amazing. I had this book at home for 20 years, and I never read it. 1 month ago, I decided to read it. What a great pleasure. Now my friend's also reading it, and we're talking about our realizations together. So this is common. But we don't always meet those people either, you know. You know, there's so many people compared to how many devotees there are, even how many temples there are. So even though so many people come to the temple, you know, when we're in the temple, we're thinking, oh my God, there's thousands of people. This is, if you look at the whole city, it's not much. Right? And if you're a football game or something, more people come. Whatever games you have, your cricket, right? How many people are home? I remember in Bombay when I was there, that, you know, like Sunday, how many people would come to the temple would depend on, you know, what kind of cricket match there was on television. If there was some big match, then hardly anybody would come. There was nothing else going on then. Gradually people, more and more people get attracted, they get, you know, conditioned to come to the temple no matter what. But it starts with books, and then they need to study the books. Like, we have so many programs to study Bhagavad Gita, to understand how to apply it in your life. That's a part of book distribution also. Everybody's, you know, participating. Someone's giving the book, someone else is helping people to understand it. And we have to be ready also when we're out distributing books to be able to, you know, like, you don't want people saying, well, what's this book about? And they say, well, I don't know, I just sell it. You know. I don't know anything, I never read it, you know. Because we meet people that have the book and are curious, and a lot of times you say, have you read it? They say, oh, I tried, but I don't understand it. So we have to be able to help them, you know, to get into it, understanding how simple it is, Bhagavad Gita. Many people tell us, you know, I tried to read it, I couldn't understand it. Because they're trying to understand it the same way you'd understand your textbook, you know, chemistry or something. The Bhagavad Gita is not like that. It's Krishna, so it's inconceivable, achintya. Krishna is not like something you understand. You want to serve Krishna. You understand that Krishna is inconceivable. That's how we understand Krishna. Not that we say, oh, I know all about Krishna like some crazy people. I know Krishna. He has many girlfriends. People used to tell us, what kind of God is that? In the 70s in America, was, you know, just been like a few years that men could have long hair, you know, without being considered homosexual. Just, you know, it became like we wanted to have long hair, you know, to show that we were not completely controlled by something. What kind of God is that? He's got long, long hair and he makes you shave your head. How can you worship him? He's got so many girlfriends and you have to be brahmachari. What kind of evil God is that? It's just a materialist. They want a God that says, yeah, you can enjoy all you want. They don't know that we're getting a much higher pleasure. They're totally beyond their comprehension. They used to think they'd see the devotees working so hard distributing books, because we used to work in the airport. So there were workers there. They would just see us all day long, you know. And they thought we were making, they'd see our money, you know. They said, oh, you guys, how much do you keep? You know, we don't keep any. What? It's crazy. It's stupid. You know, we were so happy they thought we were drug addicts. They couldn't believe it. You know, they had no idea about spiritual happiness. So it's tapasya. Preaching in Kali Yuga, probably it is much more tapasya than standing in the ice water in the winter. And literally, devotees are standing in much more than ice water in some countries. Here you have to tolerate a lot of heat, right? And in Russia, you know, it's 40 below zero or something. Many places in the world. The devotees in Finland, they do really big every marathon in December, and in a normal year, now with this global warming, it's changed, but it'd be like minus 30. They have so much clothes, like, you know, this big, you know, with all these warm clothes. But somehow or other, you know, and people think, well, they must be really sincere to be doing that. Of course, they have a sauna every night. Sauna. And then it's hot in the summer in the same place. Devotees do anyway, it's tapasya. But, and then the tapasya is, you know, putting up with all the people and, you know, people insulting you and people just ignoring you. Then we learn this tolerance. Tatikshiva karunika. That's a very Sankirtan verse, right? Devotee's tolerant. And Krishna's, you know, this is tolerance, patience, same word more or less, right? One should not be in a big hurry to get some kind of, you know, great expectation or something. Utsaha nischaya dharya, patience, enthusiasm, and determination and patience. So, going out to preach, you know, in order to keep going, we have to become tolerant of our own doubts and weaknesses. And any tradition, you know, the monks go begging, Buddhist monks, they go begging. It's not to get money. People, the karmis, you know, they think like all these, you know, like sometimes the Grihastha, not the Grihamedi, they'll think, well, I'm better than God because these servants of God, they have to come to me for money. They depend on me. They're serving God, but they have to come to me to live. But it's not, they're doing it for to benedict the people, to give them a chance to do some service, or in our case, we're giving them books. Used to be maybe people would, you know, invite them in the house for a few minutes and they could talk. Some countries they still do that. But we're giving them books. And also, you know, the monks, the Buddhist thing is they develop, you know, this equanimity, tolerance. Because sometimes you're rejected, sometimes people praise you. Sometimes they call the police, you know. In some countries, I was, like our neckbeards have this, you know, in the beginning we didn't have that, we just tied them. And, but when, in America, in Sankirtan, very often we'd get arrested. So the first time we had a policeman just took, you know, cut them off, and bees were flying all over. We couldn't untie them, you know. So then we told the market down there in Vrindavan, you know, put that thing in there. So we can, wait a minute, you want to take them off. The arrests weren't very serious, you know, just for trespassing or something. Get out the next day, pay $100, pay some tax, and we call it, pay the tax for working. But you become tolerant, sometimes it's very cold, sometimes very hot. Sometimes you go somewhere, you make a lot of plans, and you go, and it rains so heavy there's nobody around. One time I was we were in Kansas, in America. Kansas is the middle part of America where it's called the plains. It's very flat, and we grow wheat mostly. And it was in the winter. And it was what they call a blizzard in America. Huge, like a typhoon or something, but it's cold. And the wind is blowing sideways with ice and snow, and nobody was anywhere. And even if we got out of the car, you just get blown. You couldn't stand in one place. The wind was so strong. So we couldn't distribute any books. And then I had to, that was bad enough, and we were living on the bus, and the wind was, the driver forgot to fill up the propane tank. We didn't have a heater, and couldn't go anywhere because the roads were all full of snow. And then the leader of our party called up, "You stupid, what are you doing? You know, why aren't you distributing any books, you jerk?" I had to tolerate that also. I tried to explain it. Well, somebody else is snowing, but they were in a place where there was nice, soft snow, and everybody was very happy. This was for a few days. We couldn't, there was nobody out anywhere. You know, couldn't go door to door. You couldn't walk. You know, couldn't. So these, we have to tolerate. Then we have to be patient. You know, we can't. You know, Krishna is trying to just test us, so we're going to keep trying. Satyakshva Karunika. He's merciful. That's, you know, Krishna's Karuna Sindhu, the ocean of mercy. Devotees are merciful, and what does that mean? You know, they're compassionate. We want to help people. Sapara dukhi dukhi. So devotee sees that everyone is suffering, no matter how materially opulent they appear to be. They're actually suffering more sometimes, the richest people. If they're not. In India, a lot of rich people are very, you know, religious people. But more and more the young ones are puffed up with bodies in their car, and, you know, working hard. I saw in Bombay the advertisement for one energy drink. That's a big cheating business now. It said, work 20 hours or something, party all night. Just, you know, drink that. What is it? Caffeine, nicotine, and sugar. But you need to keep drinking them, you know. People become addicted. They think that's the goal of life. Just work hard, have a lot of money, and party hard, and die young. People are crazy. If you ask them what's the goal in their life, most people think, maybe, you know, some people, they want to get a big retirement fund. That's a little bit intelligent, you know. Other people, they have no idea what goal beyond the next meal, or the next, you know, movie they're going to go to, or the next, you know, sense gratification. They can't think beyond that. And most people now, they're not thinking of going to heaven or anything. So we distribute books because, you know, of course, Prabhupada is very pleased with it. And it wasn't that he invented the idea of Bhakti Siddhanta. He also wrote many books, and he was very happy when his disciples distributed books. Bhaktivinoda wrote books. All of our acharyas wrote books. Lord Chaitanya distributed books. He picked up that Krishna Karnamrita and the Brahma Samhita in South India, brought it back to Navadvipa, and they copied it by hand. And, but he, you know, he gave it, he brought it back. He when he found the book, the Brahma Samhita, then he had a copy made and he took it with him so that he could distribute it. And then Prabhupada made it, you know, took advantage of all the technology. Actually, the BBT was one of the first publishers to use desktop publishing. They were quite leading edge for producing books. And the numbers of books, you know, the religious books that were distributed are phenomenal. But there's no limit. There's always new people coming up, you know, ready to get a book, and there's always people that have never got one. So devotees are very happy to try to be merciful, see that people are suffering and they need this book. This is what will help them. They don't maybe know that. They have such a long list of things that they think they need. So, you know, they have mottos, you know, people trying to get a sanity in their life. You know, what do you want and what do you need? You know, and make a list. See how they, if you really need most of the things you want. Most people, they don't even think what they need, they just think what they want. So they're never happy because whatever you get, you want more. Devotees, whatever we do for Krishna, you know, whatever books we distribute, whatever chanting we do, whatever, you know, we want more. That's lowly and it's some greedy, but greedy for Krishna. Material greed is very, very bad. You know, lust, anger, and greed, three gates leading to hell. So the world is just promoting greed and lust because some famous economist said that many years ago, that greed is not good, but we have to promote it because it helps the economy. It doesn't help the people, but it helps the economy. Greedy people will work much, lusty people will work really hard, you know, to get a little carrot, you know, whatever they're dangling in front of them. Now here they're dangling luxurious apartments, and, you know, investment schemes and all kinds of things that you can be happy. You know, you get this car, you get this house, you get that. So one of the apartments they're selling near our temple in Bangkok, if you buy this apartment, you get a free, it's a house actually. You get a free BMW car. Of course, the apartment costs like $500,000. So the car is, the company's not losing anything to give you that. It's just allurement that, you know, you need that. If you're going to be really, people are really going to admire you, then you have to have a big house, and you have to have all clothes, everything. There's certain brands, you know, you're supposed to have. Devotees are not concerned with that. We have our cosmetic, you know, tilak, and we have our jewelry, and that's good enough, right? And that's pleasing to Krishna. And then we, you know, we have the books and the real jewels, and we're trying to give them to people. Even if they just touch a book, they get so much benefit. And we join Lord Nityananda, you know, and become intimate associate of Lord Chaitanya to be out. Prabhupada, the installation of Gaura Nitya in Los Angeles, he was extremely happy that day. I don't know in my perception, but he was sitting on the Vyasasai when they opened the curtain, you know, the Gaura Nitya were dressed in it. Prabhupada he was in front of the altar, like, couldn't perceive any in between, you know, he was there, like mystic yogi or something, and he was so happy. And then he said, now, you know, we want to, you know, enter Radha Krishna's pastimes, but in order to do that, we need to get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. And in order to get Lord Chaitanya's mercy, we need Nityananda's mercy. And then he said, in order to get Nityananda's mercy, we had to get the mercy of Jagai and Madai. So I took it, that means we had to go out, we had to meet these Jagai and Madai. He said it at that time of Lord Chaitanya, there were just the two Jagai and Madai. But now everyone is, there's millions. Everyone is Jagai and Madai. We have to approach them and, you know, do whatever we can to give them a book. We have to be kind to them, glorify them. I was just reading somebody, you know, Jai Sethika Prabhu, because one devotee said how he went to a high school in Canada, and normally he, you know, he just tries to introduce some basic ideas, but this time he was fired up and he got, you know, really heavy, and the teacher complained, you know, we don't like that you criticize the atheists, and we don't like that you say this and that. You know, we wanted you to just share your, what is your reason? So devotees were commenting. Of course, you know, that's not very good because she said, I won't invite you back. And who knows how many other teachers she'll say, don't invite him. But we have to go in like a needle and out like a plow. Not go in like a bulldozer and come home like that. The needle, you don't feel it going, you know, inject some powerful medicine. So the Jagais and Madais are out there. The Vaisheshika, he'll ask people, what do you think about something, you know? Even about something that's in the book, or show a picture from the book and say, what do you think about this? And even they say something totally crazy, you know, so it's very nice. Thank you very much for your thoughts. And he promotes always with the devotees to leave people happy, even if they don't want the book. Say, well, I, you know, thank you very much for your time. It was really nice meeting you. So people, the next time they see devotees, and they at least they know the devotees are nice. You know, the Hare Krishnas are nice people. So the next time they'll talk again to them. And eventually they're going to get the book. So that's actually, Prabhupada said, you praise them. But then you, when you're giving them the book, you're telling them really, you know, forgive them. He gave the example, I don't know, one of the acharyas. You're very wonderful. Your business is so great. You have such nice clothes. Your wife is so beautiful. Your children are so wonderful. You have such a nice car. Now take this book. So, you're really telling them, forget it, you know, it's all useless. But you don't say that. They know. Everybody knows deep down. I saw a guy, I was always very cynical when I was in high school. So I saw one guy with a Rolls Royce car. So I asked him, is this car making you happy? But, you know, but he paid so much money, thinking that he would have some prestige, you know, mainly, it's not, because nowadays, there's not that much difference between, you know, the most expensive car and an ordinary car as far as driving it, right? If in America they have these cheap hotels along the highway, so people are traveling, you can just pull off the highway and you park your car right in front of the room and you go in. You know, it's just basic, you know. But their advertisements, when you turn off the lights, you can't tell the difference between this $50 room and the $500 room. When you go to sleep, when you open your eyes, you see that you have a smaller television and a smaller bathroom, and, you know. And you can't go in the lobby and they have, you know, 25 restaurants or something. But when you're sleeping, you don't know the difference. So people are just, it's all for prestige, you know. Somebody will be impressed with me. Intelligent people know that if, you know, if they have Krishna will be impressed if you have Bhagavad Gita in your house, if you have Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Chaitanya said that anyone who keeps this Srimad Bhagavatam in their house, and nothing inauspicious will ever happen in that house. Keeping it, you know, there's just, ultimately means reading it, you know, but, because we do find, I know my god brother Ganapati Maharaj, he travels around in America to places where there's not really big temples, and visits devotees. And he saw so many devotees have the Srimad Bhagavatam set. And they never took their shrink wrap off. You know, it's still wrapped up in clear plastic. And they're keeping it very nice. So, you know, they're afraid it'll get dirty or something. It's too busy. They forget. But they buy it anyway, so they get the benefit. So then he tries to go and, you know, stay and visit somebody, one group for a week, and just read Bhagavatam every night. Get them into it. Then they'll get enlivened also too. You know, anyone can distribute books. It doesn't require any special. You know, if you're going to be the sysop for the temple or something, you need computer training, right? If you're going to do, you know, many different things, if you're going to help to build the temple, you have to know what you're doing. You have to have special talents, maybe. But to distribute books, anyone can do that. All they have to do is try. Krishna takes care. Prabhupada said if they even touch the book, they benefit. And we know if you get the book in their hand, we always try very quickly. Because if you're holding something in your hand, you naturally, after a while, you don't want to give it back. Even devotee told me in India, when you're bargaining, you know, for buying something, so, you know, you offer them 200 rupees and they're saying, no, 300. You put the 200 rupees in their hand. After a while, they don't want to give it back. They finally say, all right. You know, because they have that already. But they have the book in their hand, and you talk to them very friendly. You don't have to say very much philosophy. That's dangerous sometimes. You know, as soon as they agree with something, you just stick on that, you know, whatever you're telling. Because different people, Krishna is unlimited, so, you know, there's unlimited aspects of Krishna, so you can say it's yoga, you can say this, it's, you know, and in America, the devotees were always saying, you know, you really, you heard of stress, right? Oh, yeah, no, I'm so stressed. You know, well, this book will help you. This, you know. And they'll try it, you know, because it's desperate. In Japan, they have stress chewing gum. I guess if you, you know, I kind of forgive your problem, telling me it's the most voracious. But, you know, it's a big issue, stress. And they keep coming up with, you know, new lines, whatever people are the most worried about. And, I was telling you yesterday, Bhrigu Padi Prabhu, he's the top book distributor in the world, practically. He's 60 years old. He's still the first one out. Packing the van, you know, driving to the other devotees and distributing the most books. A couple of years ago when I went with him, you know, he would just tell people, wow, I really like your haircut. Or, girl, shoes, you know, and they're home. You know. Now he just says that he looked like a really spiritual person. And they go, first, you know, how are you? You know, are you a student? And you look really spiritual. Yeah. And they say, what? What do you mean? I don't know. It's just something about you. And they become really happy. And it's true. I tried it. At first, I felt uncomfortable. And I started thinking of them as spiritual. I started realizing these people are spiritual. They're not, you know, crazy students in California that are just mad after sense gratification. They're spiritual. Vijay Prabhu, he started, he said, you know, you have really good vibration. I feel something really good comes from you. And it's true, everybody does actually. On part and parcel of Krishna. Krishna's in everyone's heart. So if we really understand that Krishna's in everyone's heart, I'm lamenting because when I first was distributing books, I really thought about that a lot. Now I hardly ever see that. I just see all the trouble in the world. Krishna's in everyone's heart. Prabhupada said one day in a class, he said, Krishna's in everyone's heart. And he's telling people, my dear spirit soul, please don't go get drunk. Why are you doing this? Don't do that. Don't do that. People are doing it anyway. Right? They call it consciousness here. Conscious. You know. People know, you know, well, I shouldn't do this. And you do it anyway. Right? Arjuna said, why do you act sinfully even though you don't want to? Krishna's lust. Right? Mode of passion. But then Prabhupada said, when the devotee approaches him, the super soul goes, oh, he's hearing about me. The super soul becomes very happy that the devotee is telling him about Krishna. So even though that person's mind may not pick up on it right away, Krishna is very happy. And if we're realizing that, and just Krishna's in their heart, and we're doing this for Krishna's pleasure, and we're representing Krishna, and this is pleasing to Krishna, the people will also become happy. You know, they're Krishna in the heart. Because one reporter asked Prabhupada very cynically, it was in the early days in Los Angeles. So there were a lot of devotees, they had a quite nice house. And as far as he was concerned, nobody was working. They don't consider Harinam Sankirtan work, you know. You know, you're not going to the factory, you're not going to the office. Where do you get money? Prabhupada, Krishna gives it. Well, I mean, where do you get money? Krishna gives us money. Well, how does God give you money? The Prabhupada said, just like this morning, Mr. Agarwal, he gave me a donation. But I know that Krishna in his heart, he inspired him to give it. Krishna's given. Oh. So that, you know, devotees learn, and you know, you have to pray, Krishna, please, you know, help this person. There's this compassion. I can't do it. Lord Nityananda, you can do it, you know. Lord Nityananda, Prabhupada said one morning, walk. The devotee, if there's any spark of interest, he'll fan it, you know. Like you're starting a fire, you ever done that? You have to fan the fire. You probably didn't make barbecue, but we used to do that. So you get the coals, and then you get a little tiny fire, and you have to. And then finally it flares up because fire needs air. It needs fuel and needs air. And that's why, you know, if there's a big wind and the forest fire, they can't fight it because the heat of the fire creates more wind and that makes more fire. So you fan the spark. Vaisashika says that all. It's his motto on his Skype. It says, fan the spark. Look for someone who has any kind of interest in Krishna. Try to build it up, you know. So in the first place, you have to be friendly with them. Gradually, you can at least tell them, you don't say so much, but tell them this book is really nice. But Prabhupada said, Lord Nityananda, even if there's no spark, he would fan it. Create a spark, you know. That when a devotee is really enlightened, they can do that. One of our biggest book distributors, Mother Gauri, she left her body, but she could always do like double of everyone else wherever she went. And she said, she was never married. She said, I think of them all like babies, spiritual babies. She said, none of the people I give books to are interested. I have to make them interested by just being nice to them. And then, the devotees are just so, you know, because they're recognizing Prabhupada. Anyone he talked to, he was talking to the soul. He didn't care what their conditioning was, what kind of body they had, what kind of activities they'd done in the past. He would ask them sometimes, you know, just to be friendly, but when he preached, he had his total compassion. Sometimes he was heavy, you know, but it was out of compassion. Like a doctor, you know, sometimes they have to, it's painful what they have to do. So some people don't, you know, like that, you know. But it's actually out of compassion. It's kind of, you know, if your arm is dislocated or something, they have to, it's very painful to put it back. But if they don't put it back, then it's going to freeze in the wrong place and it's going to be trouble the rest of your life. So people, no pain, I don't want any pain. The boil, if you ever had a boil, horrible thing. Somehow all the poison in the body that comes out and they become very, very painful. So they usually cut it with a big knife. And then all the blood and pus, everything comes spraying out. Yeah. But Prabhupada said, they'll say, no, can't you just blow on it? You know, you see that big knife, and it's, yeah. But that, it's painful. Actually, you know, I haven't for a little while. Very troublesome. Prabhupada said it's purifying because it's so painful, so troublesome. So the sadhu, he cuts, you know, he's speaking strongly to people, but only to people that can take it. Most people, we just want to be very friendly and off show them, you know, this is wonderful, it's a happy life, you know. This book can make you happy, this book is special. They're going to, in India, everybody already has Bhagavad Gita. But they don't usually really have Bhagavad Gita, they have something. But there's so many books, but it's not, and even if it is the Bhagavad Gita, the commentaries are, you know, abominable. Prabhupada gave an example. When he was first in New York, he didn't have his Bhagavad Gita. And he was reading from that Dr. Radhakrishnan's Bhagavad Gita. And, you know, he was talking about Mayavadi, and, you know, so he said, here's an example. Krishna says, man manama bhavavakto madhyaji man namaskaru. And he said, but he doesn't mean to worship him. He doesn't mean to think of this person that's standing there. He means you're supposed to think of something inconceivable, something beyond Krishna. Krishna is just a person that's helping you to focus your mind or something, like Mayavadis say about the deity. They're most Hindus. I went to one exhibition in New York, which was called Darshan. Introduction to Hindu Devotion. It was a huge exhibition traveling around the world. It was half of the ground floor of the New York Museum of Natural History or something. Huge thing. So they had all the stuff about temples in India and worship in India. You know, how India is such a religious country. Then they had a little movie and they were interviewing Hindus to explain what darshan means. So naturally they had a rich businessman and a doctor and a professor, you know, and so you could see it's prestigious to be a Hindu. And they had their little altar and they would open the door and every one of them said, this statue is not God. God is something else. This is just a tuner, you know. We have the darshan, something to channel us to the God that is something else beyond. Because, you know, that came when there was Arya Samaj and there was another one, Brahma Samaj. when the British, you know, the Christians were so much against idol worship, they said, so then they really got into this thing that the deity is not the God. It's just something else. And devotees, they're different. In the Jiva Dharma, there's a story of one logician, famous, you know, professor, but he became a Vaishnava. He started associating with the devotees of Lord Chaitanya, and he became a complete renunciate. So his family was worried. They said, this is very embarrassing for us. We have to get our father to come back. You know, people are going to criticize us. His father became a Vaishnava. So they went to visit him. And in the course of discussion, the one son said, well, I realize now, I thought all Vaishnavas were really stupid, but I see that, you know, you have a lot of philosophy and knowledge. But please come home, stay with us. And he said, I can't go home. I made a vow that I'll never go to the house of the non-devotees. And they said, what do you mean? You know, we're worshiping the deity in our house. We have the deity. He said, no, but your worship is different. You don't believe that deity is the Supreme Lord. That they were frustrated. He didn't go home. But devotees understand this is Krishna. Prabhupada stressed that so much. We're dealing with Krishna. The book is Krishna also. So he told like traveling sankirtan parties such as we have meetings, and the book is your deity. You can offer arti to the book. You can offer prasad to the book. The book is Krishna. And that, so we're giving people Krishna. Not just an ordinary book. But whatever we say about it that will attract him is alright, because Krishna is unlimited. Krishna has unlimited, you know, aspects. So we read Srimad Bhagavatam, and then we talk about it with each other, and we try to give it to people, and that way it manifests in our heart much more. The more we try to distribute, the more we understand, the more Krishna reveals himself. Krishna, you know, is understood by when he reveals himself. Tesham satyata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam tadami buddhi yogam tam yinamam upayanti te. It's not like by constant endeavor someone's trying to serve Krishna, whatever their duty is, Krishna reveals himself. So when we're trying to especially to give Krishna to others, Krishna gives himself to us even more. And he'll give us, you know, more and more ability to seek out the, you know, to understand people, how much they can take, not to waste time. Like I was sometimes with devotees in Japan, one boy, I saw him talking to some guy for like a half hour. And I was like running around like crazy, distributing books. Talk to people for like 10 seconds at a time or something. Yeah. I said, was he interested? No, he was a Shoka Gakkai, that's one of these atheistic so-called Buddhists. And he was just arguing. I said, why did you talk to him? And then after arguing for a half hour, he just, you know, can't distribute anymore. And then the one brahmachari, he was asking, you know, at that time the ladies and the girls were doing so much more books than the men. And the one brahmachari kept asking me, how do you talk to these stupid people who are not interested? And I kept saying, you don't talk to them. You just skip them. You know? You just saying, excuse me, I'm sorry to bother you. But he wanted to defeat them or argue with them. So we had a class and I said, okay, Mahatma, you be the stupid guy. You know? And then this one girl, Gita Govinda, she was the biggest woman book distributor in the world for many years. Was always in the top five of all book distributors. So I said, you show him. You know, so she went up and tried to give him the book, and he said something, and she just took the book back and went to the next person instantly. Not one second of hesitation. As soon as he sees the guy's just going to argue, and just forget it. You know? So you see that the devotees who distribute the most books, they talk to more people. you know, it's not like everybody thinks so. It looks like it when you watch them. But also, they become tuned in to Krishna's sins, you know, because they just want to distribute, and then desire becomes so intense that the Krishna sins more nice people. You know, if you're in an argumentative mood, you know, Mayavadi kind of mood, you're going to meet argumentative people. You know, Krishna is showing you a mirror. Here's your mentality today. You know, you're ignorant, or you're blanked out, or angry. You're going to meet angry people. If you're really in a compassionate mood and you really want to help people, you want to represent Krishna, you want to be Karunika, Titikshava Karunika, Surida Sarva Bhutana, best friend of everyone. Because we're carrying Krishna and giving him Krishna as our best friend. Krishna is also the best friend. The devotees are representing Krishna. That means they're trying to help you. Trying to think how to give Krishna. Devotees asked Prabhupada how to control the mind. He said, think about how to distribute the holy name. Not that you try to not think, you know, like my buddies. Turn off your mind. The Beatles had a song, turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream. That's when they were going to the Mayavadi. You know. Then George Harrison got to Prabhupada and sang, you know, I want to be with you, my sweet Lord. I want to talk to you. And it became number one. Everybody was enamored by that, those feelings of separation. Time has gone over. Sorry. Good audience. What's the schedule? Stop. Huh? 7:45. Questions? Huh? Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaja. Thank you for a wonderful class. Maharaja, and now you are 66. Maharaja, and now you are, we know that you are increasing your responsibility in Japan, China,
and
Thailand. Already you are in Indonesia and Thailand, all these places. So how do you increase at such age, how do you increase and keep up with this responsibility? Then second, my request was, would you like to share that incident of Radha Maharaj when you got malaria in Germany?
The what?
You got the malaria in Germany and you were in coma for about some days. And
yeah, I don't remember.
That you can share, man.
Well, I learned a lot from that. First, at that time we did a lot of traveling by car in Nigeria. And the car we had was really old and gas fumes were coming in all the time. Exhaust fumes. And it was very strenuous. So, like I got to another country and we were in a different city and I was feeling like quite wiped out. And I told the devotee, I think I should get checked for malaria. He said, well, wait till we go back to Accra the next day, they've got our hospital. So I said, boy, I'm feeling that bad. Then I forgot about it and I got the fever and then I left. Flew out at night, and I got to Germany, and it was there was nothing going on at the temple, and Satchinanda Swami had come like right before me, so a lot of devotees had gone with him, and I just said, I'm really tired, I stayed at the devotee's house, and I just thought, well, I've never been so tired in my life, you know, but I thought I had good reason to be tired. That 6 driving around Nigeria. The car was so bad that every temple we got to, the driver was under the car for a couple of days before we could leave. And one time it just broke down in the middle of nowhere. We had to sit for a couple of hours till a taxi came in the middle of the desert. It was just crazy. And the devotee left in the morning and he was telling me the bathrooms down there. I was looking at the hall, looked like it was 5 miles long. You know. That's the last I remember. So he went to the temple and said, I'm worried Maharaj seems to be, you know, nodding out all the time. So they came and they found me unconscious and in a gumshoe and they took me to the hospital. I don't know anything. I just, devotee, one girl was a nurse, one devotee. She said, all those German doctors, you know, they were saying, he's in a cult, you know, he's in a, he's, they don't eat, feed properly, and this and that. And that. Somebody figured out I had malaria, fortunately. I mean, because the devotees didn't even know I'd come from Africa, mostly, you know, only the temple president. So, one of the doctors somehow understood, and they gave me the blood transfusion, malaria, and the real heavy malaria medicine. Because it was just brain malaria. Many people die because they're in a coma. Nobody knows why they're in a coma, and they don't give them the quinine, and then the blood coagulates, can't flow through the brain. So I don't remember much. I don't know how long I was in a coma. But after Radhanath Swami came, that's when I came out of it. But then later I remembered a couple times I had sort of woke up and, you know, I saw them, tried to think I've got a chant of beads, but I couldn't even get the beads. The devotees were there and they all looked like so worried, you know. Because they said, they put out on the internet, he's going to die, there's no hope, the only thing we can do is pray. And many temples did, you know, all night cure time and stuff for me. I don't know why, but... And then I popped out of it. So when Radhanath came, somehow he just, I looked over, I saw him, I was a little bit, but he was not in, you know, in this, like, so much anxiety. He was quite transcendental looking, so I talked to him a little bit. My memory was that Prithu Prabhu was on the other side, but I found out later that he had come the day before. But, you know, you get, I don't know if you ever had malaria, your brain gets really screwed up, you know. And that malaria especially. So then I came conscious and, you know, I had the trip and I lost so much weight. If, you know, fat people, if they want to lose weight, malaria is a good way to do it. You know, that Gopal, the drummer, and, you know, and then 24 hour kirtan and Vrindavan. He had malaria and something. He lost 10 kilos, like, damn, like, overnight. Never got it back. And he wasn't even fat, you know. What to speak of me, you know. Like, if I lost 5 kilos, that's a lot. You know. Anyway, it took a long time to recover. But it was good. I got very serious about chanting and diet, you know, for 1 year. I ran around much less and accomplished much more. I was chanting much more every day because I thought I have to make up for all these days I didn't chant. So I started trying to chant. It'd take me all day to chant. And I was really crazy. I felt like someone else was chanting. I was just watching them. Anyway, then I went to the German, you know, not far, but their country place. And Hari Kesh Prabhu was very kind. He gave me a room and told everybody, don't bother him, don't, just let him rest. So for 1 month, every day, I just walked in the forest and chanted. It was very cold, so it was enlivening. Unlimited forest in that part of it, in Germany. And people come there just because the air is so good. A little bit high up, and there's all these pine trees. So that, you know, I got reasonably recovered. It took a long time to get the weight back. I was shocked, you know. They told me you only weighed like 45. I said, how do they know that? They said, they had a scale on the bed, you know. So when I finally saw in the mirror, I said, ah. Took a long time. Anyway, Krishna, you know, devotees. It was a lot of money for the hospital. So after that, I don't spend so much time in there. And I'm very careful. Usually get the malaria medicine, take it the day I leave, and just in case. I got it a couple more times, but not so bad. Somehow or other, but I shouldn't say anything. I heard Radhana Swami when he was talking about Bhakti Tirthamur. And so they were talking to each other, and Bhakti Tirtha saying, I've been to Africa so many years, I never got malaria. And Radhana was saying, I've been to India so long, I never got malaria. And then, like, right after that, they both got it. I don't know, they say now kind of malaria. But somehow I didn't get it anymore. It, everything in diseases and good or bad, we have a program and so many people chant, but a few people really pick up on it. Right? They're ready. Same thing with diseases, Everybody gets bit by the malaria mosquitoes, but not everybody gets it. In Africa, everybody's had it, They get it. They get over it pretty quick, but they get really sick, and they develop a natural immunity to it. Because from childhood, one couple there, their baby was born with malaria, suffering so much. And then the doctor told them, the malaria mosquitoes come out like 4 o'clock in the morning, so they. They quit coming out from Mangalarti. They stayed under the sleeping net until 6 o'clock or something. They didn't get it anymore. They're very tricky guys. And the African mosquitoes, they're not like my poor mosquitoes, you know they're there, right? It's African ones. You can't see them. They don't make any noise. And just all of a sudden they itch like anything. And then panic because, oh my God, it's Africa mosquitoes. In America, we had really big mosquitoes. The more far north you go, the mosquitoes are really big. Like in Alaska, they're like this big. So we had these really big ones. But they don't carry any diseases. They just take blood and then they die right away. Very nasty creatures. What kind of activities someone did in their past life to become a mosquito. He said that they have sex and the female kills the male afterwards. And they always told me, like, these mosquitoes, they would, they look like those oil pumps, And they don't puncture the skin. They find the holes, pores, and they stick that thing in there. And then they get the blood and they just keep this balloon in their back, and just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And then they would fly away like so heavy. But I never, my mother would get bit by a mosquito and just get a huge itching thing and go crazy. But nothing ever happened. But my house behind was a stagnant water in a forest, and there were so many mosquitoes. So in the springtime when they come out, I would just go and let hundreds of mosquitoes bite. And then after that, they don't bite. They don't like it. And I never got any of that. But in Africa, it's different. Prabhupada somewhere, the mosquitoes weren't bothering him. They were bothering everyone else. He said, Prabhupada, because you're transcendental to mosquitoes. He said, well, in Calcutta, they don't care. Calcutta mosquitoes don't discriminate. But even mosquitoes, they like some people and they don't like us. If there's anyone else in the room, they never bite me. It's very strange. Someone will say, oh, the mosquitoes, and I say, well, there were no mosquitoes. But in my court, they get. Mayapur, they don't have disease either. Vrindavan, they have. You have to be careful. Anyway, I don't remember. I wasn't suffering in pain with the coma, I don't remember, you know, it wasn't like Krishna was coming to me. Jayaprakash was saying that. And I was thinking that when I was visiting him. Because Prabhupada did a coma, you know, for many people, it's the Yamadutta is deciding what to do. I was thinking something's going on with him and Krishna. Yeah. He said that after he told Vishnu Maharaj. He said, you know, Prabhupada and Krishna asked him, what do you want to do? Do you want to go back and try to preach, or do you want to go back to God? And he said, I want to go and preach. Then he said, but I didn't know it would be in this condition. You know, like, you know, he's physically challenged. But he still preaches more than ever. I didn't have any experience like that. I woke up and thought I've got to chant. You know, I know I didn't chant. I didn't know how many days. I know I didn't chant Japa. I knew that much. So I just thought I've got to chant. And then the doctor was a very good doctor, German doctor. But he'd never experienced malaria before. So he was, you know, all fascinated. He was reading the book and, you know, thinking what to do. So when I came out of the coma, according to him, I recovered extremely fast. You know, they said, okay, you can get out of the bed. And I was walking around and for a long time and sitting. And the nurse said, well, you know, most people they can't get even sit up for a few minutes. So the nurses were all from Croatia. They were pious. They were saying it's because of your religion, you know. And the doctor said, no, it has nothing to do with it. Your own personal drive. But anyway, they did a good job. So I got all new blood. I don't know where it came from. Blood transfusion. I didn't even know until long afterward. Devotees told me, you know, they did this, they did that. So they did a good job. So I don't know why Krishna kept me alive. I know it's because the devotees were chanting and praying. That was the internet had just started then, so they, you know, there was very crude emails we had. But somehow it got out the word. Somebody just said, there's no hope he'll die, and we just should pray that he can die next. It wasn't my time. And Prabhupada, when he had the heart attack, he said, I was supposed to die on the ship. But Krishna said, I'll let you carry on. So I hope I can do something useful. And I don't particularly want to have that disease again. So we should be careful. It's much worse than people.
And somebody...
But I always get credit. Radhanath Swami pulled me out of the coma. That's what I thought. You know, the other devotees, they just put in so much anxiety. Then afterward, you and Jack Pataka visited different devotees came because they were touring Germany. Okay? So be careful. And if you get malaria, take them out. They always coming up with new medicine that works, but then they have to keep changing it all the time. And the malaria is just very easy. But there's one that works really good, but one ingredient, but then they have to keep mixing it with other things because they just change and become immense. Hare Krishna. Gauranga.